What is blowing in the wind when it comes to wind energy development in Wisconsin? We'll talk about the stalemate that exists right now between the advocates and critics of wind turbines and why five wind development companies have canceled or postponed projects in Wisconsin. Is there a middle ground? What is the future of wind energy in the state? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 25th. An article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on Sunday laid out the controversy over wind turbine siting in Wisconsin and how it was affecting development. In the article, Governor Walker's spokesperson said he was determined to find a compromise that would satisfy homeowners who are concerned about possible adverse health effects and lower property values due to turbines too close to their homes, and the wind developers and environmentalists who say Wisconsin is losing out on the jobs and the benefits of green energy. What would a compromise look like? What are the barriers, the roadblocks to wind energy development in the state? And do we even want more of it right now? State Senator Frank Lissay proposed a moratorium on wind turbine construction in Wisconsin recently until studies definitely declare them safe for humans and wildlife. Is that the route that you think we should go or not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter @JoyCardineShow. Our guest is Michael Kraft, Professor Emeritus of Political Science and Public and Environmental Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Is that Emeritus title new for you?
Yes, it is.
Well, congratulations. Yeah, that's the first I remember reading that. So let's review the stalemate first. The way I remember it, the Public Service Commission had a bunch of rules and guidelines ready to take effect last spring.
Yes.
But Governor Walker changed them or proposed changing them. Why?
Yes. Well, the Public Service Commission had developed some rules based on all the controversy surrounding wind power siting. And the Wisconsin legislature, I think, along with the governor, suspended the rules out of concern for property rights, that is, the feelings on the part of many property owners that the siting of the turbines was being done by the state and was not sufficiently considerate of their rights as property owners. And the problem, of course, with suspending the rules is it created a great deal of economic uncertainty in the wind power industry, which was just beginning to take off in Wisconsin, and therefore put the economic development and the job creation associated with wind power into some jeopardy. So the article you're referring to on Sunday suggested that the governor and the legislature and the industry may be willing to come together and to form some kind of compromise over new siting rules for the state that would put things back to where they were about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. So the governor was proposing before the rules were suspended that the distance between a wind turbine and a property line be increased from what the PSC had. Is that right?
Yes, that's mm-hmm. right. The distance that the governor favored and that his colleagues in the state legislature favored would have made the siting requirements in the state, as I understand it, pretty much the toughest in the country. And the effect that would have is it would be very hard on the wind power developers to actually locate facilities within the state. And a number said they would suspend operations in the state if that went into effect, because in effect, it would make it hard to find any location where they could be assured they could move ahead. And like any business, it's hard to invest money given that kind of economic uncertainty.
Yeah. So while we don't know exactly what these talks are all about, does this article indicate that the governor and Republicans in the legislature who supported the governor's citing guideline might be willing to move on this?
Well, it certainly looks like it. The article makes reference to the fact that the governor and his aides are willing to talk with the industry and to work out some guidelines that would take all the interests of the different stakeholders into account. And you made mention during your news introduction that Senator Frank Lissay has proposed a moratorium on state siting, and that sort of goes in the opposite direction. And maybe it's that Senator Lissay's proposed moratorium stimulated the governor to reconsider what to do. And this is, of course, as I think most listeners know, the governor campaigned on the grounds of creating jobs in Wisconsin, and recent indicators are that not very many private sector jobs are, in fact, being created. And here's an industry that could create many jobs. I see different estimates, but perhaps as many as 12,000 jobs in the state are related to wind power and the whole supply chain for wind power. So this is not something I think the governor would want to see disappear in the state. And then that may be what's stimulating the concern in his office.
Do you have any explanation as to why the biggest wind farm in the state is nearly complete in Columbia County? That particular project hasn't been stalled.
Well, I think, you know, wind power is a very localized development, and people's objections in one part of the state may have nothing to do with the way people see wind power elsewhere. I believe that Wisconsin Public Radio, along with St. Norbert College and the Wisconsin Survey of Spring, actually did a quite nice survey of the state opinion about wind power that turned out to be very favorable. But again, you know, you can have very favorable opinion about wind power development statewide. That doesn't mean you won't have some locations, including the Brown County where I live, where there has been some considerable public opposition based on a variety of concerns. Part of it is property rights. Some people allege there are health effects related to wind power development, and I think that's what the Senator Lacey is responding to.
Yeah, he said until there can be definitive studies, deeming it safe, he wants this moratorium in place. Have there been adequate study of this issue?
Well, I think it'd be very hard to have a definitive study, and no matter what any study finds, somebody might claim it's not definitive. I think the experts would say it's extremely unlikely that living, say, within a mile of a wind turbine would cause health effects. The cause and effect relationship would be very hard to prove. But what is real is that some people believe there to be effects. They're not happy with government-imposed facilities and siting guidelines, and part of this has to do with whether you have state siting guidelines or local guidelines, and if you give localities the right to object and stop a wind project, that might work out. So I'm imagining what the governor will propose are some siting guidelines that takes all these interests into consideration. That is, that where you can have wind power development statewide with all the jobs and all the economic growth that implies, but still have sufficient consideration of at the local level for people to express their concern and have their concerns addressed, whether it be property rights or alleged health effects. And there are people who are very concerned. And the wind power developers, of course, as is true of any development, have to be concerned with, can they get the permits to go ahead? And if they start building, will people then, you know, raise enough objections that they can't operate well enough within a local area? So this just might vary from one region of the state to another.
Yeah, and that, though, is why the uniform standards were originally proposed.
Right, because some localities were going to essentially deny any projects, and the wind power developers thought we ought to have state guidelines, and this should not be subject to a local veto. And this, as is true of many considerations from schools to, you know, to other aspects of our lives. Some people feel the local government and local citizens always ought to be able to deny a project going forward. But this would create a certain degree of chaos in the state. And so what the legislature had and the Public Service Commission had proposed previously was that we have, for certain size developments, that you have state, the state regulation would take precedence over local objections. And on a smaller scale, the localities might have the right to protest. And so the article you referenced made reference to the fact that former State Representative Phil Montgomery, now at the Public Service Commission, is trying to forge this compromise, and he's holding discussions with both the critics and the developers of wind power. So it sounds like we're in the middle of something developing. The governor's office wants to find a compromise. The wind power industry, I'm sure, behind the scenes has been saying we really need to resolve this. And to some extent, I imagine the property owners and those who have objected to wind power are part of this discussion as well.
We are talking with Michael Kraft, Professor Emeritus of Political Science and Public and Environmental Affairs at UW-Green Bay, about wind power. There's been a lot of back and forth about wind turbines in Wisconsin, including a recent proposal for a moratorium, but also the news that a compromise could be in the works. And we're wondering what thoughts and questions you have about the future of wind power in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to be mostly cloudy with showers and isolated thunderstorms statewide, more so in southern Wisconsin. High temperatures, really a wide variation here. Highs in the 40s in northern Wisconsin, but near 70 in the southern part of the state. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 20 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 25th. Tomorrow at this time, we'll talk with a proponent of a flat tax. Presidential candidate Rick Perry is unveiling a flat tax proposal today, and we'll talk about it tomorrow between 6 and 7. Right now, we are talking about wind power politics with Michael Kraft from the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, and we have lots of calls, so we'll take our first one, Bob in Stevens Point. Hello, Bob.
Good morning.
Morning.
The person who gets screwed the most is the person who has undeveloped land. Some yahoo moves legally a few feet from my land gets my buffer space. Does that make sense?
Professor Kraft?
Well, it's, you know, not having any more facts, it's hard to say if it makes sense. But I think what Bob is raising is the concern that a lot of property owners have, which is a neighbor decides that putting wind turbines on the property is fine, the neighbor gets compensation, the property owner who is next door has no say in the matter and gets no compensation. Now, there is a way to resolve that, I think, and I hope the governor's compromise in the works would address this, which is nearby property owners ought to receive some consideration and compensation as well. I think that would be very easy to work out. So rather than just say, well, we're putting this on Smith's property, and so Jones has no say about it, the siting guidelines could say if nearby property owners have, you know, raised this kind of issue and they're within, say, 1 mile or 2 miles, that they be part of the negotiations.
Yeah, well, that makes sense to me, Bob. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, it's slightly more than that. It's the fact that the householder can build legally, let's say, 40 feet from my lot line.
Well,
he is getting my buffer on my side that's undeveloped. Why isn't he told that he can't do that? You know, it's like the old farmer who buys 10 Angus, and all of a sudden you got a big fence you got to put up. That old law you could get off the books while you're at it, too.
Well, I'm not sure that I think that's a different issue, isn't it, Professor Kraft?
Yeah, well, again, any siting guidelines would have to involve some measurable distance between property lines. So, and I should think if, you know, we're talking about 1,000 feet or 2,000 feet, that might provide an adequate buffer. Certainly 40 feet would seem too little by any, you know, standard, and that was never part of the original discussion. And so, you know, this may be an unusual case, but I think what anybody would want as part of a compromise would be a sufficient buffer that a neighbor is not directly affected. And now, of course, wind turbines are pretty big, at least the current generation. I think 5 or 10 years from now, we may see a different model, much shorter. Those are in development. But, you know, these are, we're talking a couple hundred, 200, 300 feet high. So even if you're 1,000 feet away, you will see them. And so there's a visual effect. But the hope is by having a reasonable distance of, you know, whatever the final number would be, would provide a buffer of some sort that would minimize concern.
Thank you, Bob. David in Lemira. Hello, David.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy, howdy. You have a lot of wind turbines around that area.
Over here, yeah, there is a patch of them. I drive tractor-trailer over the road around the Midwest. In Illinois and Indiana, there are hundreds, as far as the eye could see. And I've never seen one yet close to a neighbor's house. That would bother you, you know what I mean? In California, 15 years or so ago, driving out there, they had them all over the place. They weren't near anybody's houses. I never saw one so close, like, so close that it would bother anybody. Let me put it that way.
Well,
I think it's a good thing. And you know all the ones that I've seen, especially in Indiana and Illinois, and I'm talking hundreds, are the ones that are on these farmers' places. They're, you know, they're all spread out on land being used to grow corn and soybean and whatnot. So they must be getting some kind, the owners must be getting some kind of money for leasing that land. Who knows?
Yeah, sure, well, sure.
Yeah, sure, they... Yeah, the common arrangement, as I understand it, would be, you know, there would be a negotiation over compensation to the landowner, and obviously a lot of farmers find this very attractive, that they can continue to farm the land, and yet they get an extra amount of money. And as David indicates, Illinois and Indiana in particular, that Wisconsin's, you know, when we suspended the siting rules, what happened is neighboring states, or those in the region at least, like Indiana, quickly picked up the slack. And here's where we risk losing the industry and losing jobs in neighboring states. And nationwide, we're seeing an enormous development of wind power. You know, we could get into another discussion of renewable energy versus fossil fuels, but you know, wind power is one of the most mature of the renewable energy sources, and other states recognize that. David mentioned California, my old home state, and there are large, very, very large wind turbine farms all over the state, mostly not near people's property. So the kind of issues we see in Wisconsin have not developed.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that it probably irked Governor Walker when the executive director of a wind energy association in Illinois put up signs that said, Illinois is open for business.
Yeah.
In light of Wisconsin's war on wind, we introduce a call for wind developers to escape to Illinois.
Yes, and so I don't blame Illinois for doing that. It's just, the governor did campaign on a promise of job creation, and in recent days a number of economists have said we're not on track to create the 250,000 jobs that the governor promised. And you know, wind power is not a big chunk of that, but it's a part. And so we don't want to lose that industry to neighboring states. At the same time, as Bob reminded us, a previous caller, people's concerns about property rights or health issues need to be addressed, and I hope the governor's compromise will certainly do that.
Yeah, David was saying none of these turbines are close to people's homes,
right.
But I'm not sure that's exactly the case in Wisconsin. The guideline that the governor wanted, I think, was 1,800
yes.
feet from a property line, and that was more than what the original rules were, so close enough that people are complaining about them.
Yes, and 1,800 would make it the most stringent requirement of that mm-hmm. kind in the country. So the compromise would be you get down closer to 1,000 or 1,200 or something like that.
Yeah. Steve on Facebook writes, there are lots of potential energy sources out there. No single source is going to replace fossil fuels, but we need to get away from our huge dependence on fossil fuels for both the sake of our economy and the environment. A reaction to that?
Right. Yes, well, that's the backdrop to all this discussion is we are heavily reliant on fossil fuels, particularly for producing electricity. The only alternative, essentially in Wisconsin, to relying on coal would be nuclear power plants. And, of course, people are not so fond of nuclear power plants either. And in a direct comparison, if we're saying, you know, we'd be rather, to the extent we need to create more electricity, because the state is growing and the economy is growing and people are using more electronic devices, do we want to build coal-fired power plants or would we prefer wind power? And wind power is becoming competitive, and the controversy lies largely in the siting rules. But people need to understand that if we say no to wind power, that means saying yes to coal-burning power plants, which produce an awful lot of damage to the environment and to public health. So for all the concerns raised about health aspects of wind power, not confirmed, but people are expressing those concerns, the health impacts of coal are far, far greater than anything that wind turbines would create.
Yeah. What about the worries we hear that the turbines can kill birds or bats?
Yeah. Well, that has, again, to do with the siting. And, mm-hmm. and certainly if you bring in, local biologists who understand flight patterns for birds and bats and almost anything you put up that would, in a flyway, would involve wildlife to some extent. But many, many more birds are killed by flying into tall buildings in cities, for example, than would be affected by wind turbines. Nonetheless, this is something that can be addressed. And I think you do it through a consultation with people who understand local bird populations and where exactly to place a turbine and
And once they're up, you could certainly, if from the initial ones that are put up, you can determine whether you're within the guidelines in terms of minimizing any danger to wildlife.
Joan in Johnsburg is next. Hello, Joan.
Hello there.
Hi.
Well, I live in Blue Sky Greenfield, and I've got one 1,000 feet away from my home and surrounded by additional up to 1,800 feet away, like 7 more of them.
Yeah, and how do you like that?
Well, you guess. You know, I'm on sleep medication now. I never was on in my life. They have to knock me out. This place could burn down around me just to get a good night's sleep.
Yeah, because of the noise or the flicker?
The noise. So no matter which direction the wind's coming from, I'm in the blowback.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, where's Johnsburg, Joan?
Northeast of Fond du Lac.
Okay.
It's in Fond du Lac County. It's called Blue Sky Greenfield.
Yeah, there are.
And I am a neighboring property owner, and it's 1,000 feet from my foundation, not from my property line. They've taken X amount of my property to get their 1,000-foot setback from my home.
Yeah.
On one of them.
A brief reaction since we have news coming up,
well,
Professor Kraft.
Yeah, here again, I mean, if the siting guideline said 1,000 feet from the property line, then individuals like Joan might be better protected. I think, you know, in the larger scheme of things, nobody wants a large facility, whether it's absolutely quiet or produces a noise, right next to their house. And the siting guidelines ought to protect people who, for whatever reason, just don't want them nearby, whether it's visually or health. And at a minimum, there ought to be some compensation. Some people are concerned that property values decline. So when you eventually need to move and sell your property, you might get less for it. So.
Thanks to Joan. We will take more of your calls on wind power politics and the future of wind power in Wisconsin after we check the latest news. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with UW Green Bay political scientist and environmental policy expert Michael Kraft this hour, reviewing the stalemate over wind energy development in the state and what might move the logjam. Wind energy development has been in limbo this year because of the uncertainty over how close a wind turbine can be placed near a home or a property line. Governor Walker proposed increasing the distance between a wind turbine and a property line earlier this year, and 5 companies have suspended or canceled their work on wind projects in Wisconsin. Now the governor says he is determined to find a compromise between the two sides in this debate. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Tuesday, October the 25th. We are talking about what a compromise might look like and whether or not we will see more wind energy development in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call if you have a question or a reaction, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have linked to Facebook an article in Sunday's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that laid out the controversy over wind turbine siting in Wisconsin and how it's affecting its development. Back to the phones we go, and Kevin in Footville is with us next. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, and pardon my nerves ahead of time, but I've been following this wind energy issue now for several years, I mean 5 or 6, and what the wind turbines do not provide is the public benefit, which the industry says it does, of reducing carbon emissions, because their generation is not either predictable or it surely doesn't show up when generation is needed the most between 4 a.m. and 8 p.m. It usually shows up at night. And last night, I'm using MISO's number, the Midwest Independent System Transmission Operators numbers. Last night between 8 and 9 p.m., generation rose by 1,000 megawatts when it wasn't needed, and so that means that these people are living under the storm cloud of turning turbines with no physical or public benefit. And if you go on the radar, you can usually see the Iron Ridge wind farm showing up as a storm when there is no storm. Right now we have storms rolling through, so you can't see it, but you come by on a clear morning or a clear evening, and you see these wind farms lighting up as radar images. and they're showing that these people are living in storm situations, just the turbulence of having the turbines around.
Wow, you're really following this closely, Kevin. Do you? I mean, are you right in the middle of these things or something?
We're about half a mile away from the transmission lines that the wind developer in our area wanted to tie into, and it's because there are 1,000-foot elevations around Footville, towns of Spring Valley, Magnolia, Center, town of Union, that they wanted to put the wind farms here just because we had the elevations to make them just barely profitable. And when I say profitable, they get a 20% annual return, but they only pay per turbine less than 2% or 2.5% to the landowner. I know a farmer up in Friesland who's is getting paid an amount, $4,000 for the turbine on his land, but the access road, because the wind developer didn't like him the way he wanted the turbine placed, all of the access road is on his property now, and he's losing more value and crop due to the access road than he's getting back from the turbine.
So what's your bottom line, Kevin? No more wind turbines in Wisconsin, or
what? There needs to be a health study done by the state. We need to monitor the people living in the wind farms right now. And we need to have the people who are losing animals, both cattle and poultry farmers, are having a very bad time. There's one poultry farmer who can't get, an award-winning poultry farmer, who can't get his eggs to hatch. The eggs are showing signs of deformities that you would find. The U.S. Army did a study for women who wanted to ride in helicopters if they got pregnant, that how much vibration could their fetuses be exposed to, so they used chicken eggs. And his eggs, this poultry farmer, are showing the same deformities that the Army study used for vibrations for developing fetuses.
Wow. Have you heard anything about this, Professor Kraft?
I haven't, no. But Kevin raises a number of interesting points. Let me try to address two of them. And one is the timing of wind power generation and its use. And critics of renewable energy have long said the problem with solar is it only works during the day. The problem with wind power is it can only work when it's windy, and then if the electricity is not used at that time, you can't store it. And that's correct to some extent. And one of the technology developments underway is to try to find a way of storing that energy through batteries or through flywheels or some operation. So as the if you don't need all the energy being generated, at least it can be saved for future use during the day or late afternoon when wind power may be lower. So that is a concern, and I think the industry is aware of that, and nationwide we're trying to modernize the electric grid, and part of all that's going to be trying to develop storage mechanisms for all kinds of alternative energy or renewable energy sources. The other, we talked earlier about the need to have some kind of definitive study of health effects, and Kevin's also saying it isn't just human health, it's the effect on farm animals. Maybe it's related to vibration, maybe it's related to noise, maybe it's related to the construction of the wind turbines, and so it's a short-term effect. And I think as part of this compromise that the governor and the Public Service Commission are working on, they ought to certainly do a survey of the literature. Presumably there is a scientific literature that has been started, and if it doesn't answer all these questions, we ought to monitor what's going on and do some kind of long-term study. I don't think it's the kind of study you can do in 2 weeks, but it may mean you start off very carefully designing a study that can be completed over, say, a couple of years to answer this question to the satisfaction of all stakeholders, whether there is or is not a health effect, and what we can do to minimize any health effects or effect on farm animals that do show up.
Lynn on Facebook posted a link to a report by the Manhattan Institute that was released this month called The High Cost of Wind Energy as a Carbon Dioxide Reduction Method. And I guess in essence, it's very long, but it concludes that the savings would be so small as to be insignificant and so expensive as to be impractical.
Yeah, no, there have been others. I'm not aware of that particular study, but I understand the thrust of it, which is if the whole point of wind power is to reduce the generation of greenhouse gas emissions related to climate change, then some ways of reducing carbon dioxide, which is the major greenhouse gas we're concerned with, some ways of reducing it are cheaper than other ways. You know, so, for example, if people drove their cars less or had more efficient cars, that probably would be a more efficient way of reducing carbon dioxide than building wind turbines. But, you know, the fact is wind turbines are a business, and what we've been talking about in the governor's compromise is whether wind
turbine manufacturers, installers, and operators in the state of Wisconsin want to do this. They're making a business decision, and they're going to sell the electricity, and obviously this would only work if they can build and operate wind turbines at a competitive rate. States like Wisconsin also have what we call a renewable energy portfolio, which says you have to get up to about 10% of electricity generated from renewables. But as I understand it, we're pretty much already there. So that's not necessarily what's pushing the wind turbine manufacturers. So if the Manhattan Institute says, well, this is not an efficient way of reducing greenhouse gases, that may be true. But, of course, it is a way. And people are making individual business decisions that this is something they favor. That doesn't mean there aren't other ways, including cheaper ways, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And from my perspective, we ought to be exploring all of those ways, including our transportation network.
Tim in Elkhorn is with us now. Hello, Tim.
Well, I was going to ask how eminent domain fits in all this, but after hearing some of the previous callers' comments, it really does make me wonder. No, your guest mentioned business. Well, it's a subsidized business, so then it's really a business. Listening to this over the last few minutes have led me to the conclusion maybe we ought to be looking at just accept the fact that we may want to be green, but petroleum-based energy is maybe still the most efficient way, and maybe we ought to be putting our time and energy into other things like trying to figure out how to neutralize nuclear waste so we can rely more on nuclear power. This sounds like it's almost a dream that, without government support, it really doesn't work, and then you get all these other side effects. So why are we doing it?
Well, some of the listeners probably aware that the Obama administration and previous administrations at the national level have also done this. There's been there are various kinds of governmental subsidies for energy sources. We have long subsidized nuclear power. We have long subsidized oil and gas drilling. And the Obama administration has been particularly interested in helping to get the so-called green industry going, solar, wind, biofuels, and so there have been some subsidies there, not all of which have worked out well. Listeners may have heard of the Solyndra solar facility that went bankrupt, for example, after a large federal loan. But wind manufacturing and installation, essentially, it's the electric companies are choosing to buy their electricity from different sources, in part guided by the state mandate, but that doesn't involve a large subsidy for, wind manufacturers. So this is still a business decision. And Tim mentioned initially eminent domain, and this is when government takes property and then compensates people for it. But the siting guidelines would be similar in that property rights and concerns over health effects would be addressed as part of the where we allow wind development to take place and who makes the decision. Mostly these are, private businesses that develop wind turbines and want to install them, and of course they go to individual property owners whose location is suitable for efficient generation of wind power, and then obviously there is some compensation that takes place. So we're talking about siting guidelines in terms of minimal distance from property lines, from homes, who's involved in the decision, adequate compensation, some oversight by the state. And so I hope all of those concerns can be addressed. But if businesses decide that this is a good business to be in and they want to manufacture and install wind turbines, that's like any other business decision, and they certainly have a right to do that.
We are talking with Michael Kraft, Professor Emeritus of Political Science and Public and Environmental Affairs at UW-Green Bay, about the future of wind power in Wisconsin and the reports that the Walker administration is trying to find some sort of compromise between the two sides in this debate, the homeowners and the Realtors Association and others who say that wind turbines decrease property values and could cause health problems because of their noise and their flicker, and the environmentalists and wind power advocates who say green energy is safe and cleaner than fossil fuels and that green energy and wind power would create a lot of new jobs in Wisconsin. Five companies have suspended or canceled work on wind projects in Wisconsin since this uncertainty over siting guidelines cropped up earlier this year. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be a cloudy day today with occasional showers and isolated thunderstorms. High temperatures in the 40s in northern Wisconsin, in the 50s and 60s in central and southern Wisconsin, near 70 in the far south. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 25th. After 7, I'll talk with a guest who has ideas on how to rebuild Wisconsin's middle class. We will talk with Phil Neuenfeld, who is the president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO, about this jobs agenda from the AFL-CIO coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we are talking with Michael Kraft, Professor Emeritus of Political Science and Public and Environmental Affairs at UW-Green Bay, about wind power in Wisconsin and the future of wind power in Wisconsin. Our next caller is Mike in Racine. Hello, Mike.
Hi. Yeah, I'm pretty frustrated with the discussion around the wind farm stuff, because it seems like there doesn't appear to be a lot of good rational study or unbiased inputs into what the problems are with wind power. We live in a modern industrial society, and all of us have modern industrial issues influencing in our lives. You know, I live in Racine area, and we have the Oak Creek Power Plant that just got built just north of us. And, you know, those of us that live near the railroad tracks, we have to deal with increased coal trains and the noise that's associated. And those people that live close to the plant, there's virtually no nighttime anymore because of all the operating lights, the major industrial center now. You know, but that's part of living in an industrial society. Now, we have people that are getting wind turbines built up next to them. Let's have some people that really know how to study this stuff. And instead of special interest groups and the Manhattan Institute and whatever, we have national laboratories, we have universities. Let's get people in there and let's put microphones in this lady's house that can't sleep anymore. And let's actually measure the sound, the ambient sound level, and compare her sound level to those people that have to live next to where coal trains have to move coal back and forth.
You know, Mike, I understand that there is a wind farm proposal in the Racine area. I know that the Racine newspaper editorialized just recently, upset with the state's uncertainty over wind farm siting.
Well, I haven't heard about that, but you know, when this first came up about just after the governor got elected or actually just before he got elected, and when they were debating on this, you know, I got in my car and I drove up to the wind farms just south of Fond du Lac, and I drove around and looked at the operating windmills, the ones that are turning around, and I tried to figure out, are they noisy? Yeah, are they any more noisy or any less noisy than any small scale urban area? I don't think so. I sat in my car, and if I rolled my windows up, I didn't really hear too much. Is there another one down the road that might be noisier than that one? Absolutely, there might be. But that's why we get people that know how to study this stuff and go in and look at the aggregate impact. I mean, remember that a lot of our electricity is generated by coal. You go to West Virginia and see what's happening in those coal mining areas, and talk to me about environmental or person impact when they're moving people completely out of their homes.
Right. Thank you very much, Mike. Well, Professor Kraft, there have been studies on the health effects of wind energy generation, have there not?
I assume so. I'm not an expert on that, but to my knowledge, there are no
reliable studies that suggest there are major health effects.
Right. I remember the public health officer in Wisconsin testifying before the PSC saying, all the studies show that this is not, that the adverse health effects do not exist.
Obviously, studying health effects is complicated. You'd have to look at long-term health effects. And as Mike mentioned, people who think they're noisy and who are bothered and who can't sleep. It's not that they don't have a legitimate complaint, but as Mike says, we need definitive studies. And the fact is, a definitive study may or may not apply to an individual location. And, but he also makes a good point. We ought to be comparing different energy sources. It's not enough to say, gosh, wind turbines are not attractive. They can harm birds. They can cause some people to lose sleep, or some property owners are not compensated. But the fact is, 85% of the energy in this country comes from fossil fuels, and use of fossil fuels has some adverse effects as well. And as Mike points out, if you live near a coal-fired power plant, you've got coal coming and trains are coming and going, trucks coming and going. You have light, you have noise, you have pollution. You got mercury and lead being emitted. So everything comes in an industrial society. It comes down to how can we minimize health effects? How can we, create jobs? How can we have the economic growth that we want? And everything involves some kind of compromise. Wind power is no different. And from many perspectives, wind power has fewer negative side effects on health, on the economy. So you're creating jobs. It's a different kind of energy source. But we're still, for the next generation, we are still going to be mostly relying on fossil fuels, because there's no way wind can displace 85% of the energy that we get from fossil fuels. But it's a little bit of this transition to a future, a mix of energy sources for the future, and it always will be a very diversified mix. And what Wisconsin needs to do in other states is find a way to address all these concerns, and I hope the governor's compromise will do that, so that everybody comes away feeling we've done the best job we can. We have reliable, unbiased studies, not a study from a conservative think tank, the Manhattan Institute, which has been biased on issues like in the past. We ought to be going in that direction.
Ivy in Evansville. Hello, Ivy.
Hi. There's always a component that's left out of these discussions about energy, and that's that every effort seems to be based on centralized energy. Once again, we're building huge windmills, right? And in New York City, I've seen programs where they have, on each building, they have their own windmill, which is not very big, and it's encased in a cage-like situation where birds can't get killed and that sort of thing. Then we don't see solar panels on homes. It's because the large energy companies want to control this.
All right. And because we're so short on time, Professor Kraft?
Yeah, well, in Wisconsin, any state, we can certainly go to more decentralized energy sources. People can, of course, build their own wind turbine if they want. They can use solar panels. State of California is heavily promoting solar panels on homes. There are some housing developments where every home is solar powered. And in the state of California, and I believe in Florida as well, there are companies that have now emerged that are willing to buy the solar panels, install them on your house, and you pay a rent. You don't invest yourself. You rent them. And you pay a lower fee. So there are many a lower fee than if you had installed them yourself. So there are many ways of diversified ways of having energy sources, some local, some centralized. And I think as we look to 10 or 20 years down the road, we're going to see an enormous diversity of energy sources. And even now, people can have their own generator, a fuel cell generator, if they want to live off the grid. So wind turbines of different sizes and different locations are just one piece of this larger puzzle. And we are in a very fascinating transition away from the kind of centralized fossil fuel sources and nuclear power that we've had to a future that's going to be very different.
Just 30 seconds. So you're optimistic that this wind energy logjam in Wisconsin is going to be broken?
I'm optimistic because we have a governor who desperately wants to create jobs in Wisconsin, and we have people who need jobs. Obviously, nationwide, the economy and jobs is a big issue. I'm pretty sure the governor, this is not a difficult issue to resolve. I'm pretty sure the governor and the legislature and the Public Service Commission can find some way to address all of these concerns.
Thank you.
They can.
Thank you so much. Michael Kraft, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at UW Green Bay. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.